The Olympics will push back a year. The storied Indy 500 and U.S. Open of Golf also will postpone, to dates yet to be determined. And amid all the cancellations, NASCAR has found a path to resume virtually. Our Ben Fisher, Adam Stern, and Terry Lefton will join me to talk about the week that was and what lies ahead. Then we'll hear from executive editor and publisher Abe Madcore on what he's watching around the sports business. That and whatever else comes up once we get talking here in the newsroom of Sports Business Journal. I'm Bill King, and this is First Look. I'm joined this week by our Olympics writer, Ben Fisher, our NASCAR writer, Adam Stern, and sponsorship guru, Terry Lefton, as we try to break down a lot of what went on this past week and what is still to come ahead in a very certainly unpredictable time. Ben, let's start with you on in your world, the Olympics. We had the postponement of 1 year announced earlier this week. Take me through what that has meant throughout the Olympic movement.
Well, the immediate instinct or the immediate reply was a huge sigh of relief. There were opinions and strongly held thoughts about whether or not the game should be postponed. But the fact of the matter was tens of thousands of athletes and sponsors and junior employees of marketing, consulting, and activation companies were all in this incredibly unpleasant position of planning 10, 12 hours a day or training in the athletes' case for an event that may or may not actually be happening. So at least everybody got to take a breath and said, okay, now we're not trying to guess where I'm going to be on July 24th in Tokyo in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. That relief lasted for about 20 minutes, and then everyone realized how much work they have to do. This is planning the Olympics takes 10, 11 years. And you count the very earliest stages of a bid through the process of winning the games and then actually doing all of it. And now all of that has to be reconsidered in a matter of months. The first question being, when are we going to hold that? The IOC gave themselves a 9-month window, and the conventionalism is they're going to stick to the usual late July, early August window, but there seems to be some reason to think that people want spring games. So a lot of work to do between now and then to make this work.
Terry, I'm going to bring you in on this one. That if you're an Olympic sponsor, particularly if you're an upper tier Olympic sponsor, you're looking at that. You don't know whether you're going. You don't know whether you're not. You don't know whether you're activating. You don't know whether you're not. You don't know whether your ad campaign is about to run. You don't know whether it's not. Now you know, but here you are in this whole situation where you have to roll into entirely another year, from budgeting to everything else to planning. Where does that put a sponsor? What was the response you were hearing around that world?
Well, at least there's some certainty to it. And I think the problem right now is that businesses can plan and adjust for negative or positive news. The uncertainty and the only thing being certain is uncertainty that they have problems with. So I think actually putting it off a year and saying we're going to put it there is probably easier for them than sponsors of every other sport, because at least there's some kind of schedule and they can start talking about make goods. Everybody else, nothing certain.
Adam, here we have events falling off the board one after another this week. The Olympics, the U.S. Open of Golf pushed back, the Indy 500 pushed back. And yet NASCAR has found this whole other thing, which by the time people listen to this on, Monday or later in the week, we're recording this Friday, right before race weekend. People will have probably seen it or at least heard more about it. They certainly would have heard of what happened last weekend as NASCAR ran its first virtual race. This span in the NASCAR world, tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think NASCAR and all motorsports series, frankly, right now, we're to varying extents prepared for this, some more than others. And NASCAR, given its vast resources, was one of the most well prepared for this, along with, I'd say, Formula One. Both of them started investing in esports about a year and a half ago as the craze kind of really took off to a larger extent in the U.S. and North America. Up till before the coronavirus pandemic, their viewership numbers for what they were doing weren't really that impressive, in part because the people that were, the quote unquote drivers in these simulation games were not, star drivers in real life. But with real life being shut off right now, these star drivers who have nothing better to do are using their various simulation rigs, some of which are, you know, less than $1,000, and you could pretty much almost look like someone using it from their personal computer. The others of which are more expensive and can run up to like $40,000 and look almost like a virtual simulator, you know, chamber. So yeah, you know, they've kind of got this situation right now where they've got these star drivers stepping up across various series, Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR. These guys are all doing it. But NASCAR is the only one in the U.S. that's been able to get on linear TV. And this past week, or last weekend, was able to get 903,000 viewers for their event, which broke the esports record in the U.S. for most viewers on a linear event. Obviously, esports is pretty digital focused, so usually they're not, you know, they're more about their visual stats than linear. So it doesn't necessarily indicate that NASCAR is now the biggest esport in the world by any stretch, but just in terms of the linear TV numbers, they now kind of have the number one slot, which is crazy just the way it's turned out. This is all because of the coronavirus pandemic. So, yeah, they're kind of, you know, trying to make lemonade out of lemons, and they'll have their second race this weekend, which will now be simulcast on both Big Fox and FS1.
Yeah, pretty interesting that, you know, and then when you think about the impact on the racing industry, I was, you know, been hearing that people feel a little bit like they're back to work. I mean, you know, PR staffs were putting out releases last week off of as if they would a regular race, you know, with, you know, talking to the drivers and there is something to cover to a degree now if you cover NASCAR, not just covering, you know, the impact of the coronavirus, but actually covering competition a little bit. There are sponsorships to be sold, interestingly enough, or to roll over into this now, right? I mean, this is, I suspect, for a lot of people, almost like normal work. Maybe that's a stretch, but a little bit.
Yeah, you know, this podcast is actually being recorded in the middle of me talking to someone about when I can get this information on the record. So I'll just kind of, I won't use their identity for now in terms of the team, but I'm speaking to one team executive right now who's talking about how they're going to have virtual hospitality this weekend. They're going to try out where they're going to get the driver, the real life driver who's going to participate in this event, to do like a Zoom conference of some sort with employees and associates from this company that's one of the sponsors. So they're even now trying to extend it into the hospitality realm. And obviously these aren't going to be complete, you know, making up for what they're missing out in real life. And they're still hoping to make up all their real life races. And, you know, the CMOs of teams and all that are still going to have make good conversations. But even right now with this virtual situation, yeah, they're, like you said, you've got PR people trying to put out press releases that almost look like the ones they do on the usual week. And you've got media looking at those and tweeting about how it's making them feel normal. And yeah, it's obviously just a crazy time right now. And the NASCAR industry, and again, wider motorsports, IndyCar as well has got an event this weekend on YouTube and other platforms. They're not on TV, but they will be on digital platforms and doing a similar event. All these guys are trying to step up and give something to their fans to enjoy right now.
Terry, are you hearing and is there an opportunity for a sort of like an uplifting positive rub around this? I mean, this almost feels like a social responsibility campaign, I would think, for some. If you're a sponsor, you look at this opportunity to be a part of giving people something that feels a little bit like normal life.
Before I get there, I just wanted to say that if I'm a sponsor and they're trying to charge me for that virtual hospitality, I'm going to pay for it.
Virtual cash.
There are a few brands out there right now, and I think it's less what you were saying about public service and more a message of, we're there to help. We know you're in tough times. We're the guys that will help you. I think that more of those are coming. We've seen them out there a little bit from the likes of, you know, Ford, Nike to some extent, stuff Anheuser-Busch has been doing. And we've seen some of the licensed product companies this week try to get into it by converting their manufacturing plants to plants that now will make some gowns and masks. So we've seen a little bit of that. Generally, I would say everything's in the deep freeze. I wrote in the story I wrote for next week's magazine, it'll be this week's by the time you hear this, that, you know, both marketing and sports are in the discard pile right now. And I think it's less that people are even thinking about messaging than they are just trying to figure out when would be the right time to do it. It does harken back to the weeks after 9/11,
right?
Where you know, I couldn't get anyone on the phone. It's kind of like now, and I finally got Bob Kane, who was running IMG, on the phone, and he gave me a quote that I still remember, which was, "Nobody's even getting in the boat to rock it."
That's a great line. That's a great line, Ben. The NGBs and the athletes and their communication with each other, I suspect, again, had to be a sense of relief for some of them. And now, does it come time to sort of sort out what's the process become, right? As you look at, I think the Olympics has already said, the IOC has already said, if you've qualified, you've qualified, right? What's the process like for the NGBs now, and what do they have to deal with?
Well, this question of timing is big, because just like in Terry's example in the marketing world, not much is happening right now. And you can't continue to qualify for the Olympics until you've got more events domestically or abroad. So everything's on ice. Nobody wants to push too far, too quickly back into competition. But first of all, they have to decide what are the qualification standards for Tokyo 21 that we're now going to start styling it as. The IOC did say this morning that if you're already in, you're already in. But honestly, that's sort of an easy decision. The tougher question is about what about people who are two-thirds of the way through a qualifying process? Do they start over, or do you figure out how to go from there? So that's going to be a decision that is going to be played out. It's convoluted who actually ultimately decides all this, because generally speaking, international sports federations decide qualification for the Olympics, but the National Olympic Committees ultimately decide who represents the U.S., for instance, on the Olympic team. So it's this massive intertwined joint venture in 33 separate Summer Olympic sports. And the USOC has a say in it, domestic NGBs have a say in it, and their international global federations that run each individual sport have a say in it. They're hustling now to try to figure out what those rules are. But it's hard to say what an appropriate set of rules are until you know when we're going to be back to a normal competition schedule. So it's all a bit of a puzzle right now. I couldn't tell you if anyone's got best practice yet, because everyone's throwing up their hands and trying to figure it out.
No.
So far, people are playing nicely, but it's a mess.
Kind of like everything else right now. Let me just throw this out to all of you guys. I think especially these last couple of days, and by the way, we're talking on Friday. This is going to, you know, we're going to lay this down on Monday for everybody. Things can change a lot between now and then. Think about just the last few days. But these last few days, it has seemed like I go from, yeah, things will be back with no spectators, you know, baseball, maybe the middle of May. And then you hear, well, there may be no football season. And what will college sports be? And how do you, you know, one athletic director saying, you know, I don't even know how we put on anything if we don't have revenue from college football. It does feel like it sort of swings from one extreme to the other, which in a period of uncertainty like we're going through now, I think is completely to be expected. With that said, I'm curious from any of you guys, I'll start with you with Terry. What does it feel like to you? Does it feel like this is, hey, we'll be back with no spectators in no time? Or does it feel to you like, you know, this virtual thing might be what we're looking at for a sustained period of time?
At best, and I think it would be a mistake to come back without spectators. More imperative, I believe, is to come back in a different form. I just don't think it's smart for the leagues that are out now, you know, NBA and NHL, to just come back and say, here we are, we're back, we're playing the same schedule, we're doing the same playoffs, we're doing the same thing. Because as I said, sports is not really considered important right now. So even for the ardent fans, I think we need to rekindle a little bit. They will need to rekindle a little bit. So I would suggest an entirely new playoff format. You know, Indiana basketball comes to the NBA. Everybody qualifies, right? Or you do it, and you could do 2 out of 3. You could do it NCAA style, right? Can the 16 knock off the 1? Or, you know, in case of the NBA, I guess it would be the 30 knocking off the 1. Something like that to get the fans back into it. I think same old thing, and playing that just at a different time of year, I don't see that where that's wise. No, I think we're easy into June before anybody comes back. And there's an issue nobody's talking about, Bill, which is will fans feel comfortable sitting in an arena or a stadium?
They should be talking about it, because the answer is not all will.
Yeah, we don't know that. And I've actually been Googling today trying to find out if there's any comps in China yet. And I'm not been successful, basically, because I don't speak Chinese. but I think that's a really good question. It's not clear whether people will feel comfortable in an enclosed environment with a lot of people sitting around them.
Not to mention the plane getting there. I mean, that's an Olympics question. Even if, you know, domestic Japanese fans are comfortable going to the games, what's the man to get on a plane to East Asia in 9 months?
Yeah.
Phoenix or LA for the Super Bowl, for that matter. I mean, hard to say where consumer sentiment falls out in all this.
That's the very wild card. It does look to me like the NFL will have the typical luck, right? It's like when they had the Super Bowl in New Jersey and the blizzard was 5 a.m. the next day as opposed to 5 a.m. the day of. The NFL always seems to have good luck. And because of their seasonality and everything else, it looks like they'll be the winners in all this, and I would expect their eyeballs to go up tremendously. It will be interesting to see how many people watch the NFL draft. That's what proves the NFL's pervasiveness and power. You know, there were 6 or 7 million people watching that thing last year. I'm a huge NFL fan. I could care less about it. I just want to give me the list afterwards. But there's 6 or 7 million people last year watching what is basically, you know, an office meeting.
Yeah, I'm in that crew. I've been watching it for years, although I have to say I've fallen off in the last few, but that's neither here nor there. I think no spectators is probably the way back. Could you have players in Florida and Arizona in their own facilities under a bit more control in a more contained environment, get them ready for the season? And oh, by the way, play your games there, start playing your games there in front of nobody. No need to go, you know, to go home. No need to go back to those home cities. Just open up the season in Florida and Arizona and tweak the schedule to allow for that. Could you do that? Maybe. Although certainly it's going to be a different schedule. I think there's no doubt there will be the truncated schedule. I think there's certainly room in the agreement with the Players Association for more doubleheaders. All those kind of things that can happen. You know, I think the NBA and NHL could come back in again in empty arenas. And you talked about, you know, the NBA. Could you do something at Disney? You know, Disney is shut down now anyway. Could you go to Disney's Wide World of Sports? At least it gives you broadcast content, which people seem to want now. Now, your question becomes, as players do get sick in that environment, as they might, do you just look at it the way you looked at a player getting the flu before? I don't know. I don't have the answer. But I do think it's a question that all the properties have to be looking at now. Adam, it's the traveling circus for NASCAR to go back out there, right? And they did have, I believe, a NASCAR employee test positive. Wasn't that the who was it? Atlanta? Didn't that story come out this week?
Yeah, it did. And so they had someone who did test positive at Atlanta, which was first reported by Fox Sports. And I think at this point, you know, NASCAR is considering all options for when they'll restart. You know, they're currently scheduled for, I believe, May 9th at Martinsville, which is a Saturday night, you know, night race that they were going to basically have for the first time. The track just installed lights and it was, you know, their ticket sales were trending up. The race had a good amount of hype. So that's why they currently cut it off to there, but they've definitely been scenario planning for, you know, if they need to postpone that. And I definitely think, you know, it's possible that they definitely are considering the potential of restarting with no fans. We don't know what their final answer is yet. They probably don't know what the final answer is yet. There's just, you know, I think everyone's going to be so much smarter a month from now, 3 weeks from now. That race is about 41 days from now, I think. So they'll have to make a decision probably in about a week or two on, you know, at least some of the races that are a month from now, but or a little bit more. But yeah, they're definitely, you know, considering that. And I think it's just tough to say, you know, I mean, Kirk Herbstreit is saying he thinks that, you know, the NFL season might be canceled. But I mean, no one's really an expert right now. I mean, no, even the top experts – say they don't know exactly how this is going to play out. It's a novel virus. So I think the speculation is just kind of all over the map. And I think eventually, you know, we'll figure it out as time proceeds, just like anything in life. So I think obviously, like Terry said, you know, the NFL, they have the most time. So they'll know, you know, they have several months before they have to make a decision about the start of the regular season, I would think. Some of these events have less time. So the ones with less time, you know, they're going to be forced more into potentially having to cancel or postpone or start with, you know, no fans. But I think eventually within a couple of months we'll come out of this. But obviously no one exactly knows. You know, it could be that or it could be a lot longer. And that's why it's a novel virus. So I think obviously we'll just have to see and time will tell.
You know, there's –
you know where that – Kirk Herbstreit is an NFL expert all of a sudden. Bill, I did want to ask you, given, you know, you love a baseball, it seems to me like they've been lapped – in by the other leagues in terms of, you know, winning share of mind, winning the PR war, winning whatever you can do right now. I know they were very focused on, you know, getting the deal done with their players, but is that the idea you've gotten? And would you agree with my assessment? And what can baseball do to try to reconnect with their fans at a time? Well, shit, yesterday was opening day.
I think they did yesterday what you can do. I mean, I think that they're doing some things online. They're pushing people to do what you can do, which is watch old games. They're, you know, I think that their 30 games yesterday was a good idea. I think right now, though, it's for the avids. And maybe that's where you need to live. I don't know that I would agree that they've sort of been lapped by everybody else, because I don't feel like, you know, I think if they've been lapped by everybody else, it's the only way I would see it that way a little bit is, look, NBA players are way more active on social media than anyone else. So not totally surprising that it's Steph Curry who goes out and does this really interesting, you know, play that he made. You know, a lot of stuff out there that NBA players are doing. I spoke with Mark Bartlestein for the podcast, the NBA agent for the podcast, earlier this week, and you know, he was sort of talking about how NBA players are accustomed to doing that sort of stuff on social media, and they've continued to do that. I think that this is one of those times where if we're talking about a sport where players do a lot of that stuff, this is a time that content is the only content out there. Baseball players have done less of it. So I think that could be a part of this. But I do think that they're positioned again. I think if they do go back to spring training and they do resume games starting there, getting a season going, whether it is in front of fans or not, would be a step in the right direction. Do you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Do you guys agree with that? Or do you think, Terry, you said you think it has to be in front of spectators. If that's the case, I think we're talking about 2022.
Yeah, I don't like it, but we could debate about whether that's really sports or not without spectators. Before that, I did want to, you know, we get so focused on top tier properties here. And I did want to say, look, this is a tragedy at every level of sport, which will allow me to plug this week's column, in which I note that we're kind of upset about the psychological and financial implications of the NBA and the NHL missing hundreds of games. Little League Baseball has already missed 10,000 games. Mm-hmm. They'll miss tens of thousands more as this continues. So it's kind of up and down the food chain. And if you think there's sponsor implications at the NBA, NHL level, well, you know what? There's sponsor implications for the local Little League. Who are they sponsored by? You know, local restaurants, bars, and car dealers, many of which will be victims of this.
Yeah,
that's a good point. The U.S. Olympic Committee says that domestic events run by the likes of USA Cycling, USA Track, and Field have lost 8,000 of those already. And they add more every week.
Here we are, you know, coming out of another weekend where kids are stuck inside. And even if you're not stuck inside and you're outside playing, that's great. But not in uniform, not around their friends, not at practice, not seeing kids from other schools, not seeing kids from their own schools even now. You know, I think we're all, or many of us anyway, are living through that. And that's sad. I mean, you know, think about those high school athletes.
Are you, Bill? Speaking from experience on that, are you, Bill?
Yes, very current experience, in fact. Yeah, and my two guys are doing really well. But yeah, I think they'd rather be out with their teammates right now.
Yeah, and my son is playing more video games than usual, which is an astounding statement by itself.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
First Look is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
If you're a fan of our podcast, subscribe on your mobile device to have First Look delivered right to your phone every Monday morning. Now here's executive editor and publisher Abe Madcore with what he's watching around the sports business. Abe?
Thanks, Bill. Good discussion. A couple of things that I'm keeping an eye on. Specifically, if you look at Sports Business Daily, the most read stories of the last week were all about how organizations are responding in terms of revenue pressure and how they go forward. And I think that's going to be something that we're all going to want to keep an eye on. We saw it last week. We saw Endeavor have to cut jobs and forsake salaries, some of the top executives cutting their salaries for the foreseeable future. We saw Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment go forward with a salary cut for staff, but then revoke that after they got public pressure and a lot of feedback on social media of people who were adamantly against that move. And you see it certainly with Delaware North Company, who've had a hard time navigating this. Of course, Delaware North, a large operator of venues based in Buffalo. The Jacobs family, long time in sports, but they've been facing some criticism about their policy in terms of their arena workers. They seem to be a little bit slow. They were one of the last organizations to go public with a policy to pay workers. And certainly in Boston, where they oversee TD Garden, it's been in the news pretty much every day. And they've certainly been on the PR defensive and a lot of criticism of their approach. So I'm keeping an eye on how corporations are responding in this time. Also, you have to keep an eye on the NCAA, because look at the report late last week where the NCAA's financial disbursement to the conferences was nearly 40% lower than was anticipated. Think of the pressure that that is putting on athletic directors, on conferences, all across the food chain in terms of the pressures they now face. Could it be cutting certain programs? Could it be cutting scholarships? It's certainly going to mean potentially pay freezes, salary freezes. It could mean not filling open positions. But that was revenue that was baked in. That was revenue that was budgeted. And that is revenue now that is not coming. So I'm really going to keep an eye closely on campus and see how these athletic directors, who are under tremendous pressure anyway, have to respond to this new pressure. Look at new leagues and how they can continue. We saw how the XFL could not finish its first season. That's unfortunate because by all metrics, they were doing quite well. Look at the Premier Lacrosse League. Paul Rabel and his brother, they had a nice first year. There was a lot of enthusiasm and momentum. That is scheduled to open at the end of May, but who knows if they will be able to move forward. And that's just so difficult to, when you have that momentum and you have that traction, to basically stop your business and then to re-enter the marketplace is incredibly, incredibly difficult. But deals are still getting done. Case in point, last week, our own parent company, Advance, acquired Iron Man from the Wanda Sports Group in a transaction that values Iron Man at $730 million as an enterprise value. But that is a major deal. The deal closed late last week, so you know that this was done understanding the new environment. But Advance said they were bullish on the property, has tremendous international presence in more than 50 countries, and has more than 230 events around the globe. So I don't anticipate a number of deals to be in the size of Advance's purchase of Iron Man, but the fact that deal flow is still happening was an encouraging sign. So how can I say this? But I'm keeping an eye on everything. Most importantly, I'm keeping an eye on people's health. I know we all know people who have been impacted and who have the coronavirus. I heard from a number of them last week. Many of them were extremely sick. Many of them, though, were feeling better and on the mend as the week progressed. That is the most important aspect here. We need people to stay smart and stay healthy. We also need people to stay connected. Do yourself a favor. Find five people every day that you can reach out to and just check in on them. Let's keep the connections in the industry going. Tell people that you're thinking about them. This has a way to bring people together and allow us to share ideas and continue to do business with each other. So stay healthy, stay safe, and stay connected. I'm Abe Madcore. Good to chat with you this week. I'll talk to you again next week. Back to you, Bill.
That's going to do it for this week. For Abe Madcore, Terry Lefton, Ben Fisher, Adam Stern, and our producer, Chris Mason, I'm Bill King, and this has been First Look.